You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere. Here are your hosts, Anthony Kastrovince and Phil Rogers.
This is MLB.com Extras, Cleveland Indians edition. I'm Anthony Kastrovince, joined by Phil Rogers, and talking about Indians team that got off to a nice start in the second half, still alive in that AL Central race. Definitely still alive in that wild card race, searching for their second straight postseason appearance with Terry Francona at the helm. Phil, it's this team just keeps hanging around, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And, I mean, you start the second half by taking 3 out of 4 against the Tigers. That's sending the exact right kind of internal message. And, you know, I think we see Terry Francona doing the same kind of good work he did last year when he really kind of changed the culture there. And, you know, I think, Anthony, if this team can just get the starting rotation going a little bit better, a little bit more depth, you know, I think it could be a very, very interesting second half.
And now we're joined by MLB.com's Jordan Bastian, beat writer for the Indians. And, Jordan, the Indians came out of the break, really an important road trip for them, 11 games, all against Central Division opponents, and probably most importantly, 4 games right off the bat with a first-place Tigers team that really had their number last year, but it's been a much better story for the Indians this year. What do you think that weekend set where they took 3 of 4, what do you think that did for their psyche?
Yeah, I think it was a great way to start the break, or come out of the break, especially specifically guys like Jason Kipnis and Nick Swisher, you know, who kind of kept some encouraging stretches right before the break going, you know, after the intermission. And not only that, you know, some key contributions from the pitching staff. And, you know, to take 3 out of 4, including the first doubleheader sweep in Detroit for the Indians since 1966, you know, I think, you know, it's a good statement for the team to kind of at least say that they're still going to be in this race and still try and make a fight of it, because, you know, I think for a while now it's looked like, you know, the Tigers' division to claim and run away with. And I think Cleveland kind of showed that, you know, much like last season, you know, they're going to try and make a race of this as we go through the final 2 months.
Yeah, I remember I was talking to Terry Francona and Michael Brantley at the All-Star game, and, you know, the topic of, and they were sitting at 500 at that point, and I asked them, what's the difference between a 500 team that's a 500 team and a 500 team that has a run in it? You know, last year they were in a better spot of the break, and they obviously had a, they actually had a tough August, fell pretty far back in the race, but then had that huge September. So you personally, you watch this team day in and day out, you watched them last year, well, what's your take on it? Did they have that kind of a surge in them?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. It's they haven't been as streaky as last year, where last year they'd get on that real hot stretch and they'd rattle off like 18 wins in 24 games, or, you know, and then vice versa. I think right now it's just been, to me, it's been, you know, a few months of treading water. You know, a team that has weathered a lot of issues with the starting rotation, some key injuries, some key inconsistency from some critical players like Nick Swisher. You know, Michael Bourne missed a lot of time with injury. Justin Masterson hasn't pitched up to expectations, dealt with an injury. So I think the fact that they're 500 has kind of been impressive. This is a team that really could have collapsed under the circumstances that they were presented with in the first half. And I think as we, you know, gathered in Detroit and talked to some of the players and talked to Tito about it, that was kind of what they said, is, you know, the fact that being 500 isn't where they want to be, but they were really thrilled that they were 500 given, you know, all that they've been through. So I think in that regard, if you hope that some of these guys can get up to their career levels, you know, maybe some guys come back from injury, you know, maybe the trade deadline plays a role here, you know, that maybe then they can live up to some of the preseason expectations, because certainly, you know, in the first half, the preseason expectations were not met.
Yeah, I agree. And I'd say that, you know, you mentioned the deadline, see what they can do there, if anything, but you can also make the argument that maybe there's not a spot to fill. I mean, sure, every team could use a bat. They could use a bat. I don't know if there's an obvious, you know, hole you address lineup-wise. I think it's more about hoping guys are there in the second half. And you mentioned Swisher and, you know, hopefully getting Bourne back, although that sounds like more of a long-term thing. But, and then rotation-wise, it seems like they're pretty happy with their depth overall, and that they'll promote Salazar here soon. It seems like bring up Salazar if he can spark them, Masterson if he can get healthy and get to some semblance of his old form, and those are probably more impactful acquisitions, so to speak, than anything they could probably do at the deadline realistically.
Yeah, certainly. And I do think, as you mentioned, I think the rotation is actually the area where if they were going to make a move, it would be to pair Corey Kluber, you know, with another top of the rotation type arm. You know, they hoped Masterson would be that guy, and he just hasn't shown, you know, the consistency or the, you know, top tier performance that he did a year ago. So they do like their depth, but, you know, the way things are currently situated, you're looking at Kluber and Trevor Bauer as arguably the one and two as the most reliable arms on the staff. And if you would have told us in spring training that as we neared August, Kluber and Bauer were the one and two, I think we would have thought this team was going to be in a much worse situation than they actually are. And so I think that kind of gets back to that point that they're pretty fortunate to be where they are in the standings, considering, you know, many of the issues that they've had.
Absolutely. And Kluber, Kluber is one of the very few true snubs, I guess you could say, at the All-Star game. And so many guys get in now, but that AL pitching set was so deep. But, you know, he comes out of the break, first start against the Tigers. How many games now? He's had one or less walks and 10 or more strikeouts. I mean, his control, is when he's on, he's as good as they come. I'm still not ready to concede that he's the greatest Corey in Indians history. I still think Corey Snyder has the edge there. But what can you say about this guy's development these last few seasons?
Yeah, it's been impressive. I mean, when he first came up a couple years ago, the guy couldn't get out of the first inning. You know, it was like he wouldn't throw his slider. And, you know, I remember I remember a couple starts, I believe Kansas City comes to mind, where he just got shelled. And you watch this guy and you thought, you just really didn't see the potential to turn into this reliable innings eater and strike thrower that he's developed for and, you know, developed into for the Indians. And, you know, I think it's been a credit to him where, you know, in a recent discussion with him, he said, admittedly, a couple years ago, it would take him maybe a full turn in a rotation to kind of make an adjustment. And then maybe the next year, you know, speaking to last year, he felt like it would take him an inning or two to make an adjustment. And, you know, this year he feels like within an at-bat, he's been able to recognize either something in his mechanics or recognize a location mistake and kind of pitch to pitch make an adjustment. And I think his production on the field sort of supports, you know, what he said there. And, yeah, as you mentioned, he has four outings already this year with 10 or more strikeouts and one or fewer walks, and that already, with 2 months to go, ties a single-season record for the Indians. Dennis Eckersley, some guy named Eckersley, did it in 1976.
That's impressive stuff. What do you what's your gut say with the trade deadline? I mean, I think you know how I feel. I think I kind of voiced that earlier. I don't think it's realistic for them to make something, you know, some magnitudinal try to move in the rotation. But what's your gut tell you? And second part of that is, what do you think Masterson in the second half? What kind of spark can he provide?
Well, there's always that hope that maybe Masterson is the quote unquote acquisition that they need, and really there is that potential there, you know. And so that's definitely an option. But you're right. You look at kind of the names that have been coming up, and then you also look at the landscape of how many teams are in contention, you know. And I think Chris Antonetti, the GM, has done a good job of already addressing some complementary moves, bringing in Chris Dickerson to help hold down the fort while Michael Bourne is down, and, you know, little things like that. So I think, I kind of lean in your direction where I don't see them getting rid of like a top prospect like Francisco Lindor to bring in a top-tier arm, even though, you know, Lindor is going to be the first guy that teams ask on. You know, there's a couple other top prospects that I could see, you know, possibly being trade bait, guys like Tyler Naquin, you know, given the depth of the left-handed hitting outfielders in the system. You know, there's Indians seem to always have a lot of those. And also, just, again, I do also go back to a few years ago when I never thought they would trade Drew Pomeranz and Alex White. You know, a couple first-rounders, guys we thought were untouchable cornerstones for a rotation. Obviously, their careers have panned out differently than what we all thought they were going to be. But at the time, it was pretty stunning that Chris Antonetti swung that trade to bring in Ubaldo Jimenez, who at that time was a pretty blockbuster acquisition. So, you know, I kind of never count Antonetti and that front office out. You know, I think they've shown time and time again over the winter and at the trade deadline over the last few years that they usually do have something up their sleeve that we're not expecting. But again, I kind of sit where you are right now, where I just don't see a big, huge blockbuster acquisition, maybe more complementary pieces to the, you know, versatile group that they already have in place.
Yeah, and a lot of that comes down to, like you said, it comes down to the market itself and what's available, and there's really only a handful of actual sellers anyway. So, but I do, yeah, to your point, I do remember Chris Antonetti just before the Ubaldo trade saying, you know, when you have an opportunity to contend for a postseason spot, you don't take that lightly because you don't know when it's going to come around again. So here they are again. Good to be in the position they are, considering all the things they've dealt with, and certainly a big series for them against the Tigers, and definitely kept them alive in that division race. So we want to thank Jordan Bastian for joining us. This has been MLB.com Extras, Cleveland Indians edition.